This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
The government, hug the government, love. The government, hug the government, love. The government, hug the government.
Welcome to the Politics Gods, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney and defender of freedom, Jay Carson.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jay. You know, I realized that lately I've not been hitting that defender of freedom really hard. It's been more like defender of freedom, where it used to be defender of freedom. And I don't think you're any less of a defender of freedom. Maybe I'm just a little more.
It doesn't necessarily reflect the effort I'm putting in.
Not at all. Not at all. I wanted to just clear that up to listeners. So you're defending freedom as hard as ever, but I didn't want them to think otherwise. Anyway, so we have a number of things we want to get to today, and I wanted to start with it'd be a big deal, certainly, if you were traveling last week through the air, more than likely, because on Wednesday of last week, more than 11,000 flights in and out of the U.S. were delayed, and over 1,300 flights were canceled altogether after a corrupted file briefly took down the FAA's Notice to Air Mission, or NOTAM, safety system. Now, officials say there's no evidence that this was the result of a cyber attack, and President Biden called for a full investigation of the cause. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg told reporters, "We will not allow anything to take place that is not safe. This is precisely why our focus right now is on understanding, identifying, and correcting anything related to the root cause of how this happened in the first place." The FAA system that failed is around 30 years old and at least 6 years from a major planned update, though according to the FAA, the failure this last week was not so much an outdated software or system issue, but it was due to, in the words of one statement, personnel who failed to follow procedures. Now, that said, in its most recent budget request, the FAA described its Aeronautical Information Management Program, which includes NOTAM, as, quote, failing vintage hardware, which is not what you want to hear is controlling your air traffic exactly. But anyway, Jay, what's your take on this? One of these things that just sometimes happens and not a big deal? Or do you think there's any cause for greater concern here?
Well, I think there's always cause for concern, cause for monitoring, right? When you're talking about these systems. The first thing that struck me before we even, you know, knew what all had happened was just the, you know, the potential the vulnerabilities like a cyber attack type thing, right? That, yeah, could some hacker in Russia all of a sudden take down, you know, all flights in the U.S. and just cause havoc?
I've seen that movie.
So hopefully, I mean, thankfully that wasn't what happened. But still, this ought to prompt an inquiry into making sure that stuff like that can't happen. To the extent that this was somehow personnel failing to follow procedures, I mean, what, unplug the thing or whatever. Obviously then maybe some more training is needed, or some sort of fail safe thing so that you don't have, you know, one guy who can unplug it.
Of course, the people in charge always like to blame user error, right? You know, it's like,
yeah,
it wasn't
exactly
us.
True.
It was Joe. He's a temp, and you know, you can't count on him for anything.
That's my sense. I don't know that it ought to be just the call for, hey, give us more money. That's sort of the, that sounds just the government refrain type thing, right? Hey, we really screwed up. Give us more money. And we won't screw up next time. And that just kind of becomes a cycle when they realize every time they screw up, they get more money. So,
you're not saying this was a false flag operation or anything. Let's be clear.
No. Okay. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's more a case of never let a good crisis go to waste, right? If something goes wrong and you say, this just shows you why we have a bigger budget. So,
well, you know, and I think it's not that there are a number of things to me going on here. I think you're right that it would be weird for an agency to not make a case for why it needs more money. That agencies, that's a natural tendency for them to try to defend and expand their turf and their power and importance. And that happens through budgetary reasons. But I think it's also true that if you look at not just the FAA, but a lot of government agencies, I'll mention my favorite, you know which one this is, the IRS, that they often rely on technology that in the private sector to think like, wow, I think my dad used that or something like that. But, you know, and there are cases where like the FBI, or sorry, the IRS is having trouble finding programmers who know like the ancient computer languages, the hieroglyphic computer languages that they're, and you know, these are, these things have very real costs. And I think to me, one of the concerns is that infrastructure is about the least sexy thing in the world, right? And I mean, it seems like it's a waste of money in a way. Just recently, we had to get our driveway repaved, right? And it was ridiculously expensive. Mm-hmm. Our driveway is like 110 yards long. We're just kind of, it looked really
cool. Long driveway, 110 yards or 110 feet?
No, yards. It's a long.
That is a crazy long driveway.
Which then when you get the estimates for the asphalt guys to come in and totally redo it, you're like, oh my God, how are we going to pay for that? I guess I could sell a kidney or something, you know. But the thing is I think you especially hate to do those kind of repairs as a homeowner because you don't feel like you're getting anything out of it, right? You're like, well, we should do this before it's a colossal failure or something like that. Yeah. And that's, I think, how infrastructure is more largely viewed even by the federal government. Say, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you take that view about your driveway or more your roof or your plumbing or electrical systems, well, all of a sudden you end up with a big problem down the road. And I think there are too many government systems like that. And that's, I think, a very real concern because that imposes costs that are kind of like a drip, drip, drip. And that drip, drip, drip can be, you know, billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars over time. And so I do think we underinvest in that sort of infrastructure, and that sometimes these issues, even if they're not directly related, can at least get people to pay more attention briefly to that problem.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think that's exactly right. My concern is so often when government asks for more money, it's the, oh, no, we need this for infrastructure, but that's not necessarily
I mean, what
it gets used for.
Yeah. And I think,
and there's always that's always the selling point is we need this to fix the roof. And then, okay, well, we're going to give everybody raises.
And that in a way is, you could argue that's a fault of Congress because they certainly can specify how certain funds are or are not to be used. If not like, well, you need to give specific contracts or fix that server there that's in the north building or something like that. It can certainly be to be used for this category of expenditure and not for personnel or other things like that. And that would be, you know, reasonable for Congress to do.
But then it's like, oh, you're micromanaging us. Yeah, you know.
Well, there's micro and then there's medium and then there's macro managing. And, you know, I think a little bit of oversight certainly is a healthy thing, I would argue.
Yeah.
So we can agree on that. So, I mean, in the end, though, I mean, my feeling is that if you're dealing with any big complex system like this, it seemed like, I mean, the system was down. They weren't entirely sure the backup was ready to go, and they got it back up. But then it was like
they turned it around in a couple hours, and I was actually pretty impressed that it got turned around as quickly as it did.
Yeah. So to me, I mean, it's more like, you know, you get in any big complex system every few decades. If you get one big glitch every few decades, I don't know if you're doing too badly.
Yeah.
But I think people don't.
No, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, and you know, and also, of course, there are some people saying, well, you know, of course they're going to say that this wasn't the result of a cyber attack. Because if it really were the result of a cyber attack, and we thought that, you know, hackers in whatever, wherever, were able to take down a big part of our system, even for a limited amount of time, that would cause mass panic and other things like that. And
Right.
I don't know. I wouldn't
be panicked. I'd be kind of,
well, you wouldn't be, you know, but
angry, be damn it, you know, but
other people, because you could see where that could create a crisis of confidence in the air traffic system. And then you have all kinds of knock on effects to our transportation and impose massive costs,
suppose,
simply because some hacker was able to get in and corrupt the line of code and all that. And who knows?
Right.
You know,
I mean, do you have more confidence than now that you know that it was just a personnel error?
Well, yeah.
It's almost like I'd prefer the hackers. You know, what I mean?
Would it be better? Yeah, if the Russians or the North Koreans planted somebody in their deep cover agent,
you knew
right?
who was doing it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe I'm thinking along these lines because I'm watching that show. What's it called? Slow Horses on Apple about the group of spies, and it's all, you know, conspiracies and all this kind of deep sort of stuff. I'm not really much of a conspiracy minded person, but I also, you know, I was talking with one of my classes about this. I feel like Americans are more likely than ever to believe that things are conspiracies, in part because I think much more of our culture is kind of steeped in conspiracy theories. And I don't know if we've ever talked about that, but I'd be curious as to what you think.
You know, we have a little bit, and I pointed, this is something fascinating in, oh my gosh, it's at the end of the day, Friday, and I'm
it'll happen.
The ideological reasons for the American Revolution.
Uh-huh, yep.
Bernard Bailyn.
Yep, one of your recommendations for you, expect. Yeah,
yeah, and it's fantastic. But a great deal of our founding was based on conspiracy theories, and it's fascinating because a lot of the people at the time believed that there was a conspiracy for the Stuart dynasty. Sort of get back power, to take back hold, following, you know, the out of the Glorious Revolution in 1680, which I'm reading a book about that right now, Michael Barone.
Very cool.
Which well, it's kind of difficult. Michael Barone, right, political genius, you know, Almanac of American Politics.
Anyone insane? The
difficult thing
story,
is,
but yeah.
Yeah, everything on the former Sixth Circuit law clerk, but like every male character in the story is named James, William, or Charles, and every female is Anne or Mary.
Oh God!
And they're all to the first, second, third, whatever. But he doesn't always differentiate, and it gets,
yeah.
I've gotten lost a couple times. But anyway, going back to that, there was the sense that these bad guy Stuart monarchists wanted to retake the throne and curtail English liberties, and that what they were doing to the American colonies was sort of like a test balloon on that, right? They were, you know, that was sort of where they would start. And a lot of these Americans saw themselves not just as defending their own liberties, but defending the liberties of British subjects back home. From what they saw is like there was, you know, this skullduggery, a second time I've used that word.
I like it.
In the court, right, going on trying to do that. But anyway, that's just a thing. I do think conspiracy theory is a little bit bred into part of being an American.
So you don't think it's necessarily more so than it used to be?
I think it probably is a little more so now just because of the internet and.
Gotcha.
Well, also, you know, something about American culture. I think you could make the argument that this is all completely off the cuff, that because we are more kind of freedom loving, freewheeling, and had all kinds of people who came here to accept, you know, with all kinds of crazy ideas. Right.
Yeah.
Be they the Pilgrims or the Puritans or the Quakers. And all sorts of, you know, bizarre sects that, you know, broke off. So it seems that, you know, you would have this sort of everybody's got, you know, we were a bunch of people fleeing from these various conspiracies. And maybe we just brought it all with us. It was a good book by a guy named John Ronson called Them. It was published back in like 2000, 2001, maybe. But it's an absolute kind of hilarious look at conspiracy theories and why we believe them. And
to me, it's always been a case where I think conspiracy theories generally give too much credit to people's ability to keep their mouth shut and be competent, you know? So,
well, in my experience in government, are there conspiracies? Yes, there are, but they're not the conspiracies you think there are, right? Yeah. Much less complicated.
Yeah, they'd have to be, I would think, to work.
And it's not even so much a here is the great master plan. It's sort of like, here's step one of this plan that I kind of want to make this work. And then these other things kind of happen. And then other people jump on board and, you know.
And then somebody tells his mistress and she leaks it to the Times. And the next thing you know, it'll blow up in her face, basically, you know. So.
Well, and a lot of times also things that we label conspiracies are just sort of
like plans,
shared interests.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe we should do this. So anyway, it's not a
conspiracy when everyone in the Steelers game waves their terrible towel, right? It's just sort of they're all there to root for the same team.
Or beforehand, they say, hey, if they score a touchdown, we'll wave the towels. Like, oh, well,
exactly,
you planned that, didn't you? Yes, we did, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I don't think either of us think this was a conspiracy of any sort. But, of course, we would say that, wouldn't we, if we were on the
internet? Exactly, yes.
It's hard to tell. Anyway, before we move on, I should say that if you're not a supporter, we hope you enjoyed this preview section of our supporters exclusive midweek show. And if you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, well, if you're a supporter, it's coming up in just a second. If you're not, we hope you'll consider becoming one. You can check that out and all the benefits of being a supporter at patreon.com/politicsguys. There's also Venmo at politicsguys, PayPal, and you'll find all the support links as always in the show notes, as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And as always, again, if you are not in a financial position to support the show, but you want to get everything we put out, send me an email, mike@politicsguys.com, and I will get you all set up with that.